And you're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 100.5 FM.
A Freedom of Information request filed by the Wilderness Committee has revealed significant non-compliance at 16 independent power projects operating in the South Coast region of British Columbia in 2010. The report, entitled Operational Noncompliance of Clean Energy Hydropower Facilities in the South Coast Region, found 749 incidents of noncompliance at run-of-the-river facilities. Gwen Barley is a policy director for the Wilderness Committee, and she joins me now. Hello, Gwen.
Hello.
Are all of these projects that come under this report what are known as run-of-the-river projects?
Yes, that's correct. And they were the BC government... I did an audit of 16 of those projects that are operating in the South Coast region, and that ranges from the Fraser Valley up to the Sea to Sky Corridor and over to the Sunshine Coast. And they found that there is significant noncompliance at those facilities.
I know that we've talked quite a bit about run-of-the-river projects over the last several years, but for people who aren't familiar with what kind of operation that is, could you just give us just a little picture of that?
They're a hydroelectric operation that are generally, you know, smaller than the big dams of BC Hydro, but they still do have dams, and the dams can range up to sometimes 30 feet in height, sometimes 40 feet in height, and they divert a river into a pipe called a penstock, and that penstock flows downhill, typically hits turbines, which produces power, and then the water goes back into the river. But you can have up to 98% of the river flow being put into the penstock, and the projects were never supposed to be situated in fish habitat, and yet we find out about 72% are in known or suspected fish habitat.
So what kind of noncompliance incidents were reported for the year 2010?
Well, it was a variety, and one of the biggest instances were ramping. And what ramping means is when projects increase or decrease water in the creek or river quickly. And there's provisions. The Department of Fisheries and Oceans has provisions around how quickly you can ramp, because if you ramp too quickly, you can strand fish, and a stranded fish becomes a dead fish very quickly. So there are 300-plus instances of ramping. There is almost 300 cases of failure to report noncompliance instances. There was 100 cases relating to inadequate mitigation, and what that can mean, for instance, is if you've had a ramping incident and you have fish that are stranded, that you didn't have adequate rescuing of those fish after a ramping event. And then rounding it out was about almost 50 cases of noncompliance relating to inadequate in-stream flows, and that's just how much water is left in the natural river. And in one instance at Furry Creek, which is kind of interesting, they counted as one instance of in-stream flow violation, an instance that lasted 10 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah, so we knew the Wilderness Committee has been very, very, very concerned about river diversion projects. We're concerned about the lack of planning, the very low environmental standards, the non-compliance, but we're also really concerned about the impact, the financial impact, to BC Hydro, which is our public utility and one of our best tools against climate change. And right now, BC Hydro is on the hook, and that means ratepayers and taxpayers around this province are on the hook for over $50 billion in energy purchase agreements with private power companies. And the energy was never meant for British Columbia. It was intended for California. But California has said that they don't consider river diversion projects to be green, and they won't be paying a premium for that energy. So you just have a gong show in British Columbia. You know, projects that are not green by any stretch of the imagination have a big impact on the environment, very poor planning, and a massive impact to BC Hydro.
What kind of environmental impacts could the incidents described in the report cause for rivers and the biosystem?
Yeah, well, some of the biggest or most concerning impacts is the impact on fish, and it can include salmon. So when projects are increasing or decreasing water levels too quickly in the river, and those are ramping violations, when water is increased and decreased too quickly, it strands fish, particularly fry, particularly young fish. And a stranded fish can become a dead fish very, very quickly. So that's a key concern, that you're seeing incidences below the powerhouse, and that's not where impacts were supposed to be felt. and impacting fish in a way that had not been anticipated originally. Then also, these projects aren't small, so you're diverting up to, you can divert up to 98% of the river into a pipe. All these projects come with transmission lines, they come with road networks, they come with logging, they come with blasting. The BC government saw fit to have no planning anywhere in British Columbia for these projects. And so it's, and we have a Ministry of Environment that is about 50% smaller than it was in 2001. And also, as many people are aware, the federal government in the last 18 months has eviscerated federal environmental legislation, including the Canadian Environmental Assessment Act and the Fisheries Act. And both pieces of legislation previously applied to river diversion projects in British Columbia. So we have a situation in BC that's scary. We have extremely low environmental standards. We have poor oversight and poor regulation and compliance. And then we have just a massive, massive impact to BC Hydro. And again, when the BC government introduced this energy initiative in 2002, it had nothing to do with producing green energy. It was about energy, electricity deregulation. That was all the rage at that time in North America. You saw it happen in Ontario and Alberta and California. And actually, the BC government at that time in 2002 was actively lobbying the federal government against implementation of the Kyoto Protocol. So it was about electricity deregulation and the slow-motion privatization of BC Hydro. And so here we are today, 11 years later, and the public's left holding the bag, and we have dozens, scores of rivers that have been put into pipes. Producing electricity that we don't need is very expensive and is environmentally damaging.
How's the cumulative impact? We're talking about a report from 2010. A couple of years have passed since then. Maybe not all the violations were captured. Has the cumulative impact of private hydroelectric operations been properly assessed?
No, it hasn't. And one of the problems with that is because we have no planning in British Columbia for these projects, there was never an identification, okay, hey, there's certain places that river diversion projects shouldn't be going. And a great example of that is the Kokish River. Now, the Kokish River is on Vancouver Island, and it's a very unique and special river. It has five species of wild salmon, two endangered runs of steelhead, which is very unusual, eulachon, and cutthroat trout. And last year, the BC government and the federal government signed off on that project and allowed it to be dammed and diverted. And the Wilderness Committee just recently got a federal Freedom of Information request back, and it showed that local scientists, scientists with their boots on the ground in DFO, recommended that the project not go ahead because the danger to fish was far, far too high, and that the impacts couldn't be mitigated. And then things got political, and the recommendations of the scientists in DFO were overturned, and that project was approved. But that's a great example of the lacks of checks and balances that we have in British Columbia when it comes to these projects.
I understand that the report itself that we're talking about here was quite frank about the ability of the government officials, their inability to respond to non-compliance incidents. So what recommendation did the report make to improve the situation?
A variety of recommendations that, you know, you need better enforcement, you need better management, you need to make sure that ramping guidelines are being followed, and there's a new ramping recommendations that have been put together, I believe, by DFO and the BC government, and they're precautionary standard, and industry needs to implement that. They need to make sure that their measurements of in-stream flow are working properly. They need to make sure there's better coordination with BC Hydro. There's a whole list of recommendations that this report that we got through FOI puts forward, and the government needs to implement those recommendations. They come from their own, ministry. But the other thing that the Wilderness Committee is saying is because of the low environmental standards, because of the massive financial impact, that the Wilderness Committee is calling for a moratorium on all river diversion projects in British Columbia. It's pushing BC Hydro right to the edge of bankruptcy. And again, it's not acceptable to have 72% of projects in known fish habitat or suspected fish habitat. That this is a bad idea. A river diversion projects were a bad idea from start to finish. And we need to immediately enact a moratorium. When the bill comes due, when people start seeing their utility bills go through the roof, the reason why those utility bills are going to go through the roof is because of the extremely high cost of private power. Now, river power is known as being intermittent because typically you get the highest amount of power during spring freshet. That's when the snow is melting and the rivers are running high. But that's not when we need the power in British Columbia. We need it in the winter when those rivers are running low or sometimes they're frozen over. And it was an idea, I think, guided by ideology. It was guided by a government who believed that the private sector could do everything better, and a foolish belief that California was going to pay a premium for this electricity, and California has said they are not going to. So we're left holding the bag with scores of destroyed rivers and with $50 billion in energy purchase agreements that the BC public will have to pay off.
What can people do to try and change this situation? Well, is there anything people can do?
Yes, there is. Absolutely. We still live in a democracy, and so one of the most important things they can do is contact their elected representative and say that they strongly support a public BC Hydro, they strongly support Wild Rivers, that we need an immediate moratorium on private river projects in BC, and they can go to the wildernesscommittee.org. We have a letter writing tool up that's already ready set to go, and people can go to that letter writing tool and they can send, just press a button and say a few words in their own, you know, because it always makes it always helps when you also express it, not just in a form letter, but express your personal feelings in a letter writing tool, and then click a button and you can send it off to decision makers. And once people know what's happening to rivers, once people know what's happening to BC Hydro, people are outraged. And so the next thing they need to do is get mobilized and reach out to decision makers. And that's, we can change things.
I really, really appreciate your talking about this issue this morning. It's good to talk to you again, Gwen.
My pleasure.
Okay, bye now.
Thanks again.
I've been speaking with Gwen Barley. She's the policy director for the Wilderness Committee. And you can, as she says, find out more about this issue and take action through their website at wildernesscommittee.org.
This podcast was produced by the Red Eye Collective in Vancouver, BC. If you live in the Vancouver area and are interested in creating alternative radio with us, we'd love to hear from you. Contact us at redeye@coopradio.org.